Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Imagine unlocking a version of yourself that's unstoppable, where mental barriers no longer hold you back. Listen to Mentally Stronger with me, Amy Morin, therapist and international best-selling author, here to guide you on a journey to reaching your greatest potential. Every Monday, I bring you into conversations with some of the most fascinating minds, experts, authors, entrepreneurs, athletes, and musicians. They don't just share stories, they reveal the mental strategies that propelled them to the top. But here's the real magic. At the end of each episode, I break down their wisdom into practical, therapist-approved advice. In my solo episodes, I dive deep into the techniques that build mental strength. It's like having your own personal therapy session as you discover how to turn these insights into steps you can take right now. This podcast isn't just for those facing mental health challenges. It's for anyone who wants to push their limits, achieve peak performance, and truly thrive. Are you ready to unlock your full potential? Then it's time to become mentally stronger. Subscribe to Mentally Stronger with therapist Amy Morin, available wherever you love to listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
From this happiest moment of your life to now the saddest moment in your life in the same day, because you're realizing when you get a visual that you're looking at the woman you love and she's in a medically induced coma and she just gave birth to your son.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. If you're a parent, you know that the birth of your child is an incredible experience. For Steve and Camry, it didn't happen at all the way they expected it to. Steve got the call at work that Camry was at the hospital and had already delivered the baby. He dropped everything, drove there frantically, and he was confused because the baby wasn't due for another 7 weeks. He ran into the hospital, and the first thing he saw was his newborn son, Gavin. He quickly scrubbed up and held him for the first time. There's a picture of that first meeting of father and son in the show notes for this episode at whatwasthatlike.com/39. There was an immediate bond between them. What Steve didn't know was that at that moment, Camry was being put into a medically induced coma in order to save her life. He also didn't know that when she would come out of that coma, she would have no memory of anything. She would not recognize Steve. She wouldn't even know that she just had their baby. That was the beginning of a long journey for this family, and Steve wrote a book about it. It's called But I Know I Love You, and you can get it on Amazon. And if you enjoy this podcast and would like to support it, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. I really enjoyed my conversation with Steve, and I hope you do too. Have you always wanted to be a dad?
Since I've been a little kid, I've always wanted to be a dad. I've dreamt of it, swinging on the swing in my backyard. I've had an amazing father, and it's just something that has always been with him inside of me.
And now you're living it.
I am living it. Yeah.
Well, we're going to get into the whole story here, but I got to tell you, is prior to this conversation, I got your book that tells this whole story, and it's an awesome book. I highly recommend it. We're going to be we'll give you people the information about where they can get that here in just a few minutes. But and at the beginning of the book, you talk about the night or the time when you first met Camry, and that is so amazing. I'm not even going to tell I want you to tell the story here. I'm going to let people read the book to find out. But
we don't want to ruin it.
It's just incredible the way you two came together, and it was like an instant chemistry. You started dating, and then what's amazing, you planned this proposal for her to ask you to be your wife. And the incredible part is that all that effort that you put into it to make it memorable, and she doesn't remember any of it, right?
That's correct. Yeah. I really put some thought into it. We lived on a private little lake. We had the small little two-bedroom cabin built in 1920. It was this cool little cabin lake home that we lived in, and we would always go on the water, and I kind of decorated our boat, our pontoon boat, as the love boat. It was on the 4th of July, so free fireworks show. And I told her, "Oh, wow, look at that firework." And she turned around, and I dropped down on a knee on her boat, and I proposed, and it was a memorable moment. It was something that anybody who gets engaged, these are things you don't forget. Luckily, I have a few pictures of that, of the love boat, of the sign. And I just wrote it on a piece of paper, put some tape, nothing too fancy, but it was the thought, and it was a special night for sure.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about, she became pregnant, and there were some problems during the pregnancy, and can you just talk about what happened?
Shortly after, she became pregnant, and we were on cloud nine. We were excited. She was excited to be a mom, and I was excited to be a dad. And our families were excited. Now, I was 31 years old at this time, or 30 years old, and I think my mom thought, I don't know, time's running out, Stephen. So she already had four other grandkids, all boys. And so Camry, we became pregnant. She became pregnant. And it was, just kind of going through the first trimester was really good. The second trimester was really good. And we were just kind of cruising along. And as a first-time father, you really don't, you really don't think about it. You just think, oh, you get pregnant like everybody else I see, and they have the baby, and then you become a parent, and you go on in your life. Well, for us, the third trimester hit her like a ton of bricks. She started to develop nausea. She was constantly throwing up, and she just couldn't hold food down. So we would constantly bring her into the hospital, back and forth, back and forth. And they eventually put a Zofran pump on her just to kind of keep the food in her, and so she doesn't throw up constantly. So it was shortly after that we had the baby shower, and that day, she couldn't even make that day. So she was on bed rest.
That's got to be devastating that she couldn't go to her own baby shower.
Yeah, I only opened a few gifts and I left the rest for her. I took them back and we opened up together. That way she still has that feeling of the baby. That way I didn't have to do everything. So it was shortly after that, a couple weeks after, where she developed some swelling into her throat. And that's when our real problems started to happen.
You really didn't know what the problem was at that point, right?
Not at all. Well, we were constantly going back and forth to the hospital or to the OBGYN. And it was the same thing. We'll rehydrate you, send you home. Rehydrate you, send you home. She had some swelling in her feet because she stood around for work. So they had her on bed rest. I didn't know what to expect. My expectations were, I think they were at the time where she's, everything's going to be all right. She's going to be fine. I wasn't too worried.
Yeah, neither of you had gone through a pregnancy before. And often, that's your common here. When you're pregnant, yeah, you throw up sometimes. So it was no reason to think anything really unusual was happening.
Yeah, and she's such a strong person. She plays it off so well. Like, yeah, I'm fine. But she's throwing up. As she's throwing up, she's telling me she's fine, right? And that's just the type of person she is. She's incredible. She's very strong, and she's strong-willed. And so I was like, okay, she's fine, because she kept telling me she's fine, and I believed her. So it was shortly after that. she had some swelling develop in her throat. We got her to the emergency room. They ran tests. Blood pressure seemed to be fine. Everything. They didn't know what it was. They thought maybe it can be an allergic reaction to the Zofran pump. They didn't have the answers yet. So they kept her in the hospital overnight just for observation. And that afternoon, she actually, she ended up having a grand mal seizure. And she's never had seizures before. She had a grand mal seizure with our child inside of her. She had undiagnosed preeclampsia. She actually went eclamptic. Her blood pressure shot, skyrocketed to the roof, had a grand mal seizure.
When this all happened, you were at work.
Yeah, I was at work.
I know she was in the hospital, but I mean, you had to go to work. So
this time she was on bed rest, and we had a house together. But she was just staying with her parents. Her mom was a stay-at-home mom. Her mom was at home. So her mom can kind of keep an eye on her all the time. So I had to go take care of our dogs that night. Camry being herself, she goes, go home, take care of the dogs, go to work tomorrow. And I'm like, okay. So I went to work. And I was going to work a half day, and I was going to come up back to the hospital. And that's when I got the phone call from, Camry texted me an hour before this happened. She told me she loves me. She's fine. The baby's fine. Everything's fine. She's doing great. And then an hour later, I get a phone call from my mom on my work cell phone that frantically, basically crying and screaming that Camry had the baby. Camry had the baby. And I was in shock, and I just hopped in my truck, and I drove 90 miles an hour to that hospital. I ran from the parking lot to the delivery room, and as I ran into the delivery room, I put my hands on my knees because I was out of breath, and they were wheeling in Gavin as soon as I ran right into him.
So that's when you saw him for the first time, when you first ran into the hospital?
Yeah, two nurses were wheeling him into the NIC unit. And I just kind of dropped to my knees. And I looked at him and they say, are you Steve? I said, yep. And then this is your son, Gavin, but we got to take him into the room. Go wash your hands. Wait for us to call you. We'll put a wristband on you and you can meet your son. So that's kind of how... That's how we met.
Man, that is, I just can't imagine the overwhelming confusion and emotions. You know, this is meeting your son for the first time and not knowing what Camry's situation is. Just overwhelming.
Very overwhelming. I was asking the doctors and the nurses, okay, how's Camry? Because they're telling me Gavin's fine. And they're like, we don't know yet. She's in the ICU. She's in a medically induced coma. She had a seizure. They saved the baby. She's alive. And then that's basically the information I got. So I put my focus at this time just for a few minutes. I got a chance to meet Gavin, and he grabbed my finger very tightly. And my first thought when I looked at him, he looked just like his mother. I called him Camry Jr. And, it brought the, biggest smile to my face. He was healthy. He was 4 pounds, 1 ounce. He was premature. He was 7 weeks early, and he was 16 and a half inches long, but he was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And I was instantly in love. So I brought, all the family one by one coming to meet him. We weren't able to go upstairs yet because they were, doing their tests and everything with Camry. Finally, we got to go in that room, and it was just that if anybody's been in a hospital before, you got the beeping and the, and it's just kind of this, from this happiest moment of your life to now the saddest moment of your life in the same day, because you're realizing when you get a visual that you're looking at the woman you love and she's in a medically induced coma and she just gave birth to your son. And then I have this instant guilt that I wasn't there, which for a long time I kind of blamed myself. But then I realized over a period of time that, hey, there really nothing I would have been able to do anyways. But at the same time, you kind of wish I was there.
Yeah, of course, as a father and a husband, of course you'd want to be there. But as you said, over this time, you've realized even if you were there, it's nothing you could do. And it was 7 weeks before she was due anyway. It's not like you could spend all your time in the hospital.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it. And I was at the hospital most of the night before. I mean, I left at it was like 1 a.m. So I was there for a long time. So I got to take care of the dog. So that's why I left. And So yeah, that's kind of where I found myself, is going in between seeing our son and then to seeing Camry in this coma.
And then that kind of began a period of a lot of mystery as to what her condition was and what caused it and what the long-term prognosis would be. It seems like your overwhelming feeling was frustration at just not getting answers.
Yeah, we were not getting any answers because they didn't know. That was the frustrating part, is you put all this, you know, this trust in the doctors, and they just had no idea what happened. I mean, they know that she had a seizure. They put her in a coma. They saved her life and Gavin's life, but they didn't know the extent of her injuries. In fact, they didn't even know she had a brain injury. So that night, I spent the night in the hospital. I slept next to Camry's bed, as well as the next night. And that next day, day and a half, they pulled the tube out of her throat, and they let the morphine wear off and the drugs wear off. And then we noticed something wasn't right. She was hallucinating. She was talking to her hand. She wasn't coherent. She didn't know that she just had a child. She didn't know who I was. She didn't know who she was. She didn't know her parents. She didn't know anything. She thought she was in church. So she didn't even know she was in a hospital. So we were obviously like, okay, we want some answers. And they're like, whoa, we don't know. Let's get the psychiatrist. So they got the psychiatrist, and he kind of quick diagnosis that he thought that she had postpartum depression psychosis. So that's when we didn't even know what that was at the time. And then we were just kind of going with it. We're like, okay, so there's an answer. We believe that was the problem. But shortly after.
Yeah, because what else can you do when a doctor tells you something? What else can you do other than say, well,
just okay.
He's the expert, right?
Yeah, apparently. You know. But finds out he was not an expert. But so from the time that Camry gave birth to the time she was in this hospital, it was about 5 days. 5 or 6 days. And during that time, we just really weren't getting any answers. And in fact, she even went from, she was kind of coherent, and we tried to let her meet Gavin for the first time, but she was just not right. There's something wasn't right, and everything was going wrong.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we ended up having her life flighted to a different hospital because a trauma hospital, because we just thought, you know what, something's not right here. And we found out, yeah, she suffered a severe brain injury and she lost all of her memory.
And the other hospital was more equipped with neurologists and people that could tell what was going on better.
Yeah, the hospital we're at, it was not that they were bad. They were just, it was more of a residency hospital where it's just people, it's like a learning hospital. So at that hospital, Camry was more like a guinea pig. They're trying to figure out what's going on. The other hospital, they just laid down the law. They said, move out of my way. We're going to figure this out. And they just were so confident. And they did. Within days, they figured out that she suffered a traumatic brain injury, severe brain injury from loss of oxygen, because her throat was swelled up. So when she had that grand mal seizure, she lost oxygen to her brain. With that oxygen, suffered a stroke, and that's what happened.
And all of this leads back to the preeclampsia, which was not diagnosed.
Which was not diagnosed, no. It was undiagnosed.
Has anyone told you, why was this, why did they miss that? Do you know?
No, we don't know. We never really pursued that issue. We had a lot going on. We were asking questions. We have the medical records and stuff. We were trying to figure stuff out, but we never really figured out exactly what happened. But we do know that this was from most of our information came from the other hospital. So that's how we kind of learned everything.
You sent me a picture of you holding Gavin
Yeah.
And that was when you held him for the first time. When you look at that picture now, what do you think of?
I think of a dad for the first time not knowing what he's about to, the journey that he's about to embark on. Unbeknownst to me at that time, I had no idea Cameron even had a brain injury in that photo. I was just happy to be a dad. I was happy my son was alive. I was happy that Cameron was alive fighting for her life in the ICU because she still was alive. So I see a dad who's just beyond happy, beyond blessed, and but at the same time not knowing what the future holds for him and not knowing the journey that he's about to go on. And it has been an incredible journey.
I get the impression from you that you are a natural optimist. Is that how you would describe yourself too?
Yeah, I look forward. I don't try not to look behind me too much. I think that with hard work, and I'm a firm believer in God and Jesus Christ, and I have a lot of faith that has been built that's inside of me, and I try to think in positive thoughts and not negative. So negative thoughts will just bring you down a rabbit hole you do not want to go down. I think the word that best described for me that's helped me is hope. I always have hope that things are going to get better. If they might not be good today, but you know what? They could be possibly better tomorrow. And I'm willing to hope that they will be. So I think hope's a good word.
I think so too. And it's really, when you're in a situation like that, that's the best way to look at it. Because otherwise you could just crawl into a corner in a fetal position and just give up, you know? Probably some people would.
Yeah, I think giving up's the easy route though. Right? I mean, life's not easy. So I've always been a competitive person, but not with people, just within myself. So if I give up, I get disappointed in myself, and I don't like being disappointed in myself. I mean, sure, we all have disappointments, but I really try to just think positive and have that faith and really, really put my faith in God and knowing that He has a plan for myself, and not only for me, and now it's for my family.
Can you talk about when you first started, you know, Camry's out of the coma now, mm-hmm. and you would go into her room and try to communicate with her. What was that like in the early stages?
Well, it's difficult because she didn't know who I was. So when I was trying to communicate with her, so when she's out of the coma, I'm trying to tell her, hey, you just gave birth to the most beautiful little boy. And she would look at his picture and she would smile at it, but she would not know who he was. I would introduce myself and she would not know who I am. And when we learned that she suffered that brain injury and that she had no memory and it happened just beyond her memory lobes, life took a crazy turn because I was just heartbroken that the woman who made me a better person that I love deeply now, and we just had a child together, now doesn't know who our own child is, or myself. So it was tough talking to her because she didn't know who I was. I was just, hi, I'm Steve. And it was like nothing would register at all. So it was a tough time.
What's amazing is that even though she didn't have memory of anything or didn't really know why she was there, she wasn't afraid of all these apparent strangers who were talking to her and everything.
She was so positive. She had a smile on her face. She didn't freak out. She just went with it. And she just kept going with it. You could tell her something, and she'd be like, okay. But then she would forget what you told her right there. So it really didn't matter. She was just this happy little, just person. You know, when I think back to that time and she was, when she finally got released from the hospital, I would constantly remind her who I am, that we had a child. Now, at this time, too, I was working. So she had moved back in with her parents. She didn't know we had a house. She didn't know we had a child. So we were the beginning stages after she got home. She got home before Gavin. Gavin was still in the hospital. She got home within like 30 days and Gavin was like 35 days. So that 5 days, I would pick her up from her parents' house after I get done working And I would bring her to, she didn't know who I was. She didn't want to get in the car with me. So I would try to convince her, like, hey, I'm okay. And her parents would say, hey, she didn't really know her parents, but she trusted her mom, it seemed. So she would, her mom's like, this is Steve. This is your, in fact, we weren't even married. We were engaged to be married at this time. So she wasn't even my wife. She was my fiance. And, she would just hop in the car eventually. We would go drive up there and she's like, where are we? Where are we going? Who are you? We'd get to the hospital. Okay. Where are we at? Who are you? Where are we going? It's just this constant, what's going on? She just had these questions of what's going on constantly because she literally had only at that time, maybe, you know, 30 seconds of memory, long and short. So it was just this constant. She had so many questions, but they were the same question over and over again. Like, where are we at? Who are you? Who is this child?
And she didn't even know she was asking the same question over and over.
No, because she would forget. It's hard. I still, even when I talk about it, it's hard to wrap your mind around that. If you lose all your memory, we hear stories of people losing memory, but I don't think in this capacity when you lose all your memory. And not only when you lose it, you keep losing it within seconds and seconds and seconds. And then, over a long period of time, then it was a minute. And then she had but you can't time it exactly. There's no rule of thumb to her memory loss. It's just the way it is. And right, you just have to accept it.
But this is what I just find so fascinating about this whole story, the mental aspect of it. So you guys would get to the hospital and she would still, she would ask you again, where are we? Why are we here? But yet she knew about a car. She knew she was traveling. And
I don't think she knew she was traveling. I just think she would forget instantly. It was an instant, just forget. And I don't know. She was just kind of in the, just kind of out of it. And it's really hard to describe. It really is, because you really kind of have to see it and live it. But she questioned where she was and where she's going and who people are, but she never questioned okay, I'm hopping in this car. Do I have to, she never really overly questioned. She was just more curious of who are you? She had this trust. She trusted people. She had this innocence about her, right? She had this innocence about her. She was just this beautiful, innocent woman who had no idea who she, myself, her family, her whole life was gone. Everything. She lost everything. Still to this day, she still doesn't remember her childhood or our son's life. All these memories are still gone.
At some point, it seemed like you saw progress because she was starting to remember her own name. Was that the first sign that she might get better?
Yeah. Now, of course, like I've told you before, I was always hopeful that she's going to improve. Yeah, she was only 24 when this happened. So she had age and time on her hands. So over a period of time, she remembered her own name. Like, okay, I am Camry. And she would even question. She's like, okay, my name is Camry? Yes, you are Camry. Okay. And it just, she got that repetition about who she is. And she started there and it kind of worked. It just kind of kept going. And there was these little defining moments when you look back of her knowing her name and then her telling, like the title of our book, her telling me that she doesn't know who I am, but she knows she loves me. And her accepting the fact, she would just go with me when I would pick her up eventually. She would just come over and she trusted me. And we were starting to be a family. The first year, she lived at her parents' house for well over a year. She would just kind of come over and hang out for a few hours, and then her parents would pick her up, or I would drop her off. So I was responsible for Gavin. I've raised Gavin. It was just me and Gavin at nights, and then I would drop him off at either daycare or her parents' house, and kind of do that cycle for, we've done that for a long time.
So that's kind of that was your routine at the time.
We had a routine where I worked 6 days a week, 5 to 6 days a week. And I would, Gavin would be with me at night. I would then take him, Camry, or just take him, depending on if she came over. In the beginning stages, she wouldn't come with me because she didn't know who I was. She eventually started to trust me because I showed up every day. I think part of our story too is just showing up every day and not going away, not giving up, just showing up. And I always showed up. I was always at her parents' house, ready to pick her up. Even if she didn't want to go with me, I was ready to pick her up and ready to get Gavin and go start our family life at our house. And then it wasn't ideal. It wasn't an ideal situation that it's not what I wanted, obviously, but I was happy enough and thankful enough that I still had my family intact. And that's what meant the most to me. And I was willing and still am willing to do anything to keep my family together.
And that's got to be, you know, I think about this from the perspective of her parents and seeing their daughter have to go through this, but they have to be just so incredibly relieved to have someone like you saying, it doesn't matter what happens, I'm here for her for the rest of her life. That's what I'm committed to, and I'm going to take care of her.
Yeah, I re-proposed to her. I talked to her dad. I said, I love your daughter. I love Camry. She was the one when I first met her. I knew it right off the bat. So I think, you know, we have developed a fantastic relationship.
Was this about the time when she came home and so you guys were all living at the same house?
It took about a year for her to move back in.
Okay.
It actually took longer for her to move back in. She just brought a to-go bag. And so she would spend the night. She started spending the night, but it took, you know, nine months for her to spend the night. So that first, say, 9 months, 9-10 months, she just brought a to-go bag. She would come over for a few hours, and then it would just kind of be me and Gavin at night. And so, like, I did all the, you know, I got up every night. I did all the burping, the feeding, the bathing, everything. I was like mom and dad.
When their seizures started, was that after she had come back and was spending the night at your house, or was that before she came back for good?
That was a year after her brain injury. She had her first seizure while she was at her parents' house during the day. Obviously, the ambulance came, all that, went to the hospital. And then she just started having seizure after seizure after seizure. So then it was just, you know, and this is where her parents are fantastic. They, you know, she was at her parents' house while I was working. So they gave me the opportunity to still make a living, still take care of Gavin, and that they were taken to her doctor's appointments during those days. And a lot of times her mom had Gavin too, and she would be at the doctor's with Camry, with the little baby. So she had her hands full as well. So, you know, it hasn't just been all me, you know, takes a village, they say. But yeah, that's when she started developing epilepsy and then getting on different seizure medications, the dosage of these medications are insane. Like she, you know, couldn't walk right, walking sideways, it would knock her out. These medications are just...
So those were side effects?
These are side effects, yeah. Side effects are memory loss, nausea, dizziness, and she's only like 110 pounds. So when you're taking 2,000 milligrams of seizure meds, because her seizures are really bad, they developed... I mean, first year, she was no seizures, and then boom, it hit her like a ton of bricks, and she was having seizures every other day. And not just little, it's grand mal seizures. So then our lives took a turn where... trying to figure epilepsy out and not only when she was with me having Gavin, taking care of Gavin, but then she's having seizures. She's on the floor seizing or in the car seizing, or we're out, like, you know, grocery shopping or something, having seizures there. So then our, you know, just seizures were a part of our lives, and they still are to this day.
And she kind of can tell when one is coming on.
Yeah. She knows when one, she knows. She has this aura, she calls it, and she'll take her little, she has this little Ativan medicine she takes to hopefully kind of subside the seizures. It usually just cuts the seizure, you know, down, the timing down. But, I mean, she used to, in the beginning, have like 12-minute long grand mal seizures. She knows when they're coming, and she'll say like, "Hey." So anytime I hear the word "Hey," I freak out because it's just, you know, I'm on edge. I'm always like,
right,
you know, it happens quite often.
How far in advance does she know? Like when she says "Hey," how much time do you have?
Seconds. I mean, because she'll stand for a while. I can tell you, she's strong. She'll stand and have a seizure. It's like she does not want to fall. But eventually, if I wasn't there, she would just tip over. But she's always looking for somebody. Like if she does, like if she's in the other room and I hear "Hey," she's already standing up and kind of coming towards me. She's trying to find me. So, and I usually just carry her and get her to a safe location. You know, over time now, our son has dealt with quite a lot of seizures. He's seen a lot, and so he deals with them really well. He'll get her a blanket, a pillow, and kind of prop her feet up and just say, "It's okay, mommy," and he's really good with it. So it's been his whole life, really.
Partway through, or after a while, you became concerned just from the legal aspect that you were not a husband, you were a fiancé still.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your thought process there and... what happened?
Well, I asked her dad again to re-propose. So I did another proposal on another July 4th, and it was just in front of all our family. And it was just to show, you know, I was so dedicated, and I still am, to her and our family. And I wanted her to be my wife, not just my fiance. I've been waiting for so long. We've been through so much. It took 3.5 years after her brain injury for us to get married, but even the first proposal was still another 2 years after that. But it was when I know that she knew who I was, she knew my name, she knew who Gavin was, she knew our life together, she knew where we lived, she was improving, she showed tremendous signs of improvement, and she was doing, you know, she was getting better, and she was on the road to recovery. Even though she might not remember the day before, she was becoming more aware of her surroundings and kind of what happened to her. Because that took a long time for her to remember that she couldn't remember.
Yeah, that's what I would also, I was wondering about the same thing. Does she ever ask, "Why can't I remember things?" But now she knows.
Now she knows. She didn't, so she would ask questions like, "So what, I have a brain injury." You would tell her she has a brain injury, and she would not remember that she has a brain injury, or she couldn't remember. And you explained to her, "You lost all your memory." And she's like, I lost my memory? And she had a hard time, and then it just kind of faded away, like within, you know, shortly after you would tell her. And so she couldn't remember that she couldn't remember because she had short and long-term memory loss. So it just, she couldn't do it. And then, but over time, as her brain is healed and she's becoming more and more and more aware of her surroundings and what happened to her, she remembers now, she knows exactly what happened. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's easy for her because it's not. It's actually gotten, you know, when you start realizing, she's starting to realize what she lost, you know, and she's realizing what she lost, and she lost her whole life. She lost her son's childhood. She doesn't remember her son's childhood, so, or her own. So that's a tough pill to swallow for her. And but I give her credit huge credit. She doesn't give up. She always is constantly, you know, she has her bad days, but she always is moving forward. And I try to be that positive light in her life. And she has her son. She does it for our child, where she wants, even though that she might not remember doing things with Gavin, she knows that Gavin has a memory. And so she does it for him. And so she's just incredible.
Do you do a lot of video so that she can look at this and say, "Yep, that's when we did that day"?
We take a lot of photos. We have some videos here and there. We just do a lot of photos. The hard part about photos, though, is she can't place herself in that photo. For like me and you, we can go back like, "Oh, look, we're on the beach, you know, and this day, this whatever." For her, she goes, "How did I get to the beach? Where were we? What were we doing? What's behind?" There's nothing behind that photo. But, you know, we have our wedding video, which was an amazing day, which she, again, doesn't remember, but we have the video, and she watches constantly.
Do you ever try to, like, you guys took a vacation to Clearwater Beach, which is like 20 minutes from me, actually. And I know you're up in Michigan, up where it's cold, but
yeah.
You guys went to Clearwater Beach. Do you ever try to, and she doesn't remember any of it.
No.
But do you
that
try to-
That was before the brain injury.
Right, yeah, that was way before.
Yeah.
But do you try to kind of recreate those things for her now so that she does have a memory of it? Yeah. I know it obviously it's not the same thing as going through it, but does she remember now that, I mean, she doesn't remember actually doing it, but does she know that you went to Clearwater Beach that one time?
If I tell her, she'll believe me. She's like, did we? Because I don't lie to her. I got, I stay very, very honest and very, I keep it real with her. And so I'm not going to sit here and try to recreate her memories. All I can do, I mean, I think that was kind of where the book came into play, where she doesn't have our 10-year relationship. So that's kind of why I wrote it out. But, you know, I think it's for us is trying to live in the moment and make these moment memories, make these, you know, these just whether it's going on vacation, we go to Great Wolf Lodge with our child or go up to her. We have a cabin up north. We were just in Florida. She has family in Sanford, Florida. We were just in Florida past June for grandpa and a lot of her family lives out in Sanford. And we were just out there and she might not remember it, but we're living in the moment. We're not taking life for granted anymore. We appreciate every day, every opportunity, everything, every blessing that it's gone our way. We appreciate everything. So I think that's the difference. I'm not going to recreate anything. I'm just going to, I tried to recreate our own, the engagement. I didn't recreate it on the boat. I just did something different. And it's just doing new things and trying new things. And hopefully, you know, one day these memories will stick. Hopefully we can, we're working towards beating epilepsy. Like I said, these side effects of seizure meds are memory loss. So if we can get rid of some of these, maybe some more memories in there and we'll get it out of her. So again, I'm hopeful for great things in the future. I'm hopeful she'll drive one day. I'm hopeful that, you know, now she's, sometimes I can, you know, we can leave her alone with her child. That took 5 years just to be left alone with her own child. So we're just grateful, you know, for anything. And you know, anything that comes our way, we're, you know, positive or negative, we just keep moving.
The brain is a pretty amazing thing, and we don't even know how amazing it is.
Oh,
so
it is.
Who knows how it can retrain and recreate itself to, you know, to heal and come back from this. Obviously, she's made lots of progress since the very beginning.
Oh,
how long does her memory go back now?
A couple days.
Yeah, and before it was seconds or less than a minute.
It was seconds. She can think back to something we did like a week ago, but she can't tell you, did we do it a week ago? She doesn't know when we did it. She can't, you know, how we can kind of categorize, like, oh, that was, if we really think about it, it was, you know, oh, yeah, I think we did that last Wednesday or, you know, but you know you did it. You know the specifics. I think she just knows it's like a shadow. She knows maybe she did something, but then over time, that memory or shadow just kind of disappears. But if we have a picture of it and she can look back, even though she might not remember actually doing it, but she knows that she's living life and she's doing things. And I think her goal is just to get better, try to get healthier. She wants to get better. She's strong. She's a fighter. She's getting better. And she wants to take some stress off me. She, you know, because I have all the weight of everything's on my shoulders, and she knows that. But it's not her fault, and she wants to be a mom.
Does she struggle with guilt because of you having to do all the work?
Yeah, she wished she could do more. She wished she could do more. But I think from my standpoint is I try to include her in like everything. We have a joint calendar, so if something's going on, I put her on it, so she knows. We do a lot of things together. So yeah, she wishes she can do more. She wishes she could just drive Gavin to school and she wants to go to the school and, you know, be that mom that all these other moms, she sees these other moms with their kids alone driving. That hurts her because she wants that so bad, but she just can't have it right now. So I'm
not yet.
So yeah, not yet, but she'll have it in the future. I know she will.
If you knew in the beginning what you were about to go through over the next several years, would you think you could handle it?
First of all, I'd tell you, you're crazy because it's been an unbelievable journey. I don't know. I think I've handled it pretty well.
I think you have too.
Yeah. Scott.
For what that's worth.
Yeah. Thank you. you know, it's just, for me, it's always been about family and just keeping our family together. We had this dream when we became pregnant, how happy we were when we opened up, when we found out Gavin was going to be a boy. We picked out his name together. We did all these things together, and I didn't want to lose her, and I didn't want my son not to grow up without his mom, and I didn't want to grow up without, and I didn't want to live a life without the girl who I loved, and even though she might have not known who I was, I knew who she was, and I knew how strong she was, so I wasn't going to give up on that, and I never will.
I think it's great that you've written a book to describe this whole journey. What was her reaction in reading that book?
Well, she's read it three times. She doesn't remember the book yet, but if she keeps reading it, she's going to get all our, I think that was my mindset behind it. It was, she keeps reading it. It's rote memory. She keeps doing it. She'll remember our 10-year life together. And then maybe in another 10 years, we'll write another book. But she enjoyed it. At the same time, I will be honest, it does remind her of what she lost at the same time. So it's this, wow, look what we've been through. She loves the fact that I wrote her a book and that I wrote a book. But at the same time, she realizes I don't remember this stuff. And that's hard. That's hard for her. So it's kind of, you know, that catch 22, but she handles it very well.
You know, what amazes me, the parts of this story, it's kind of a medical story and a neurological story, but really, above all, it's a love story.
It is, yeah.
All right, so this book, it's called But I Know I Love You, and that was because of a particular thing that happened, which you can talk about if you want to, but how do people find the book and where can they order it?
Well, the title of the book comes from a time early on when she came home from the hospital, and she was at her parents' house, and I was trying to get her to come home. She did not want to come back home with me. And I was sitting on her couch, and she just looked at me and says, I don't know who you are, but I know I love you. And that was this defining moment. And for me personally, because she didn't know who I was, but she says she loves me, I'm taking it. And that was another, this huge amount of hope that I've always kept inside of me, knowing that she loves me and that we're going to build a new relationship and a new love. So the title came, that's where the title actually came from, is But I Know I Love You. The book is available on Amazon. I self-published it on our wedding anniversary, on our fourth wedding anniversary. And it just describes our 10-year journey that we've been on from the first time I met her, from our first date, from baby shower to the birth of Gavin, and then some other defining moments in our life. And the feedback has been incredible. I did not expect our book to get this much publicity. I didn't know what to expect. I think I was kind of naive to the fact. I was hopeful that people would just read it and enjoy it. I think that's what I want, and I think that's what's happening. I think people are actually enjoying the book. So it's been incredible. It's just another blessing from God and in our family. They just keep coming. So,
yeah, and I think people enjoy the book because it's such an amazing story. And, you know, I mean, we can talk about it here for 45 minutes or an hour, but of course, you go into a lot more detail in what actually happened and what you were going through and everything.
Yeah.
So people can find this on Amazon. You have a website too. What is that?
ButIKnowILoveYou.com. Or you can follow us on Facebook at But I Know I Love You on Facebook. I upload some family photos and, you know, just kind of maybe some articles that share our story. But I think in the future, it's going to be more of just, if you want to follow our family, you can, you know, I'll put some photos here and there. I don't overdo it because I'm not like the, I don't put everything on there. You know, I'm not that guy. But I just put a few family photos here and there, and I just, so you can get a little insight of our life.
So how old is Gavin now?
Gavin's 7 years old now, which is incredible to think. I can't believe he's seven.
Seven.
Yeah. Man. Time flies.
I can tell you from personal experience, blink your eyes and he's going to be off to college.
Yeah. Everybody, even when he was first born, everybody says, enjoy it while it lasts. Because before you know it, he's going to be 18 and he's going to be moving out. So I think that's the mindset as a parent. And I think for most parents is you just want to raise your child, build them up right, put the faith in them, and give them the confidence to succeed in this world, because we do live in a crazy world and anything can happen and life's not guaranteed. And, you know, we're extremely proud of him. He is such a good kid. He's good in school. He has one of the warmest hearts for a 7-year-old you'd probably ever meet. So he's an incredible child, and we're just extremely grateful that he's ours.
I'm going to have links to all of what we've talked about here. We'll have some pictures on the website in the show notes for this episode.
Okay.
So people can check that out. And if they want to contact you, they can do that through the website as well. And it's great to hear. You guys are, I mean, people say just, you know, live in the moment, live for today. And you guys are doing it on a pretty literal basis.
Every day, you know, and more for her, obviously, than me, because I can reflect back. But for her, it does make me and what happened in our lives not take life for granted and really appreciate each moment we do, even if it's little, it's putting up our Christmas tree. You know, every year I don't take anything for granted. Every moment I cherish everything that's been in our lives. So I'm just extremely blessed, grateful, and thankful that things are going well.
Hey, thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed Steve's amazing story about his family. I wanted to let you know about a couple of other things in case you aren't already aware. First, this podcast has a private Facebook group where all of us can get together and talk about these crazy stories. In fact, several of the guests that I've had here on the podcast are also in that group, so you can talk to them and maybe ask some of the questions that you're wondering about that I forgot to ask them on the show. You can join the group and join the discussion at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And if you're on Instagram, you should check out my page there. I post something almost every day, and it's usually something interesting or unusual or crazy, stuff you don't usually see on other Instagram pages. You know my motto, never be boring. My Instagram page is all one word, What Was That Like? And this is the last episode for 2019. It's been a really great year of growth for this show, and that's because a lot of listeners have told their friends about the show. So if you know someone who listens to podcasts, be sure and let them know about this podcast. In fact, just send them to the website and have them take a look at the past episode titles. I guarantee you they'll say, "What? I've got to listen to this." And I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with 2 young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with 2 young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.